Welcome to the Sunday Times Politics Weekly. I am your host, Sisanda Aluta Mbolegwa. In this week's conversation, we are joined by none other than SAFDU General Secretary, Mr. Zwelinzima Mavavi. He sits with us this week to unpack a variety of issues pertaining to the political landscape in the country. He sits with us and chats to us about his views ahead of this upcoming election and what it will take to truly fix some of the biggest crises and challenges facing the country. Tune in.
You asked Mr. Ramaphosa to sit down first. I'm standing.
Now I warn you.
I need to put on my big girl panties and keep going.
You can't have two speakers standing at the same time.
Security services of the Republic of South Africa, you may intervene.
There's been several attempts on my life.
Lower that hand.
It's not alarm.
The president is accused of serious crimes.
In order to pursue the greater good, you have to enable some people to eat a little bit.
Corrupt people do not eat alone. They have a spider web.
I now suspend the proceedings. I have warned you.
Mr. Vavi, thank you so much for your time. We appreciate you taking time out to be with us in studio. I'm going to start with the decline in trade union membership. What does this mean for workers' bargaining power?
Well, it means that the voice of the working class is weakened. It means that their power has declined. It means that their relevance is being challenged. And I hope that we'll have time to talk about what could have led to this unfolding tragedy in terms of the numbers of workers who believe that trade unions are still relevant for themselves. But we've done very well having started black trade unionism in 1918, battled along with the ICU in the 20s and battled into the 1930s, 40s, and leading to the creation of the first bigger non-racial federation in 1955, the South African Congress of Trade Unions, and unfortunately then getting battered totally forced to exile after the Sharpeville massacre by the brutal regime, and then coming out of age again in 1973 through the 1973 Durban strikes that spread all over the country, and to recreate again a new momentum towards the 1976-1979 when the Vienna Commission made recommendations about recognition of black workers as workers, up to when the trade union movement worked very closely with the youth movement in the country to respond to a call that had been made by O.R. Tambo in exile, that South Africa must be ungovernable and that we must make apartheid unworkable. And the unions grew in the back of militant struggles and leading to 1990, and when we began to see the release of the first prisoners, Harry Gwala, later Walter Sisulu, Mkwai, and Mutualedi, and others. And then eventually the unbending of the ANC, APAC, and others, the release of Nelson Mandela. The unions were absolutely powerful at that moment, but they consolidated their power even more post 1994, such that by 2007, the unions were almost representing 40% of all workers in the economy. And after 2012, the unions lost their jogo, their mojo, and their juju, it just disappeared, and for a myriad of reasons. And I can speak about those reasons, but I just wanted to show you that actually the Marikana massacre would have not happened if the Union was still as relevant as it was in the early 90s, early 1994, 80s, and 70s. It was a statement of neglect. It was a statement on the part of the workers who felt that the unions were no longer representing their interests but that of management. It was an era when the gains workers have made through consolidation of their own trade unions was beginning to bite the trade unions themselves. Because at that time, and unfortunately or unfortunately, the clever management in the mines in particular was beginning to outsource its responsibility to manage employment relationship between the mines and the worker through the union. So the shop stewards now were de facto HR managers. They were employing people, and they were recommending who must be dismissed, in particular those that were the enemies of themselves, and were in that process getting corrupted. And so by 2012, workers on their own decided that now we can no longer rely on this historic union, the National Union of Mine Workers. And they led themselves, and unfortunately the massacre happened. Whilst that massacre was happening, there were other uprisings also making the same statement in the farms of the Western Cape, the Dwarrens areas, where farm workers were taking up a battle against a wage directly and indirectly imposed on them by the union. In that, through the establishment of all of these institutions, such as the employment equity where unions have representation, such as the wage commissions that was looking at how we set sectoral determination, the unions were represented in those bodies. And yet the average worker salary at that time in 2012 was around 67 rands. And a whole day. And workers said, no, we want at least 114. On their own, they fought. No union involvement, showing total distrust on the union correctly. And then won their own battles. So from there, you have unfortunately a message being sent throughout the country that these guys are useless and that we can fight our own battles. So I spoke about how management would have slowly provided the power unions wanted, but in the process capturing them to be part of management, and then the rest is history. We have written a very detailed discussion paper analyzing what have gone wrong in the trade union movement between the 1973 strikes and to date, which was last year. And when you read that, it's a very, very heavy criticism of ourselves as a movement, that we've lost the plot and that there's a need to revive the trade union movement, but revive it based on the values, the ethos of the 1973 struggles of workers that represent the true values of the working class and black people, centered around Ubuntu. Ubuntu itself representing the best traditions of sacrifice and solidarity and all of those things that makes us to feel that if we were to practice these values, South Africa will be a better place.
Yeah, definitely. In your reflections, I think it's quite evident that in the absence of decisive leadership, the people shall govern themselves. And speaking to the unions not having as much power as they wielded in the past, and the decline in trade union membership, we're just trying to find out what is the reason behind the decline. Is there a trust deficit between workers and unions, and what has led to that outside of management's interference in that relationship? What has led to that decline or that trust deficit?
Is both internal and external issues. Mm-hmm. Let me start with the external issues. The external issues is that the capitalist system, inspired by the neoliberal ideology represented by Margaret Thatcher and Ronald Reagan, who in the main centered around an ideology that says there should be no state, there should be no protection of anybody, including worker, environment, women, everything. Every member of society must stand on his or her own to battle in his own, her own, in his, her own corner to survive. And they call this free market. We call it free market fundamentalism. And when that happened, the capital started to restructure the working class. And let's face it, they have now succeeded to restructure them into the following categories. You've got workers who belong to the big firms, with big workplaces, big numbers. And up to today, those workers are still enjoying the fruits of the sacrifices, the struggles of themselves and the previous generations. And it is those workers who enjoy most of what flows out of the Constitution of South Africa that promises every worker fair labor standards. They're able to use the Labor Relations Act, the basic conditions of employment, the Occupational Health and Safety Act, the Employment Equity. They use all of the gains of the pre-1994 to defend their rights and to advance some of the gains that they would have inherited. And the South African labor regime is progressive. And it requires, unfortunately, the big, strong, powerful unions who can enforce it in the workplace. And so that's a category of workers that you have in South Africa. You have a second category of workers who are employed and who are outsourced, who are employed by small firms. They are typically not more than 10 in their workplaces, and who are in what we call the atypical forms of employment. And these are doing jobs that offers them no job security. Mm-hmm. They have no protections in the form of employment equity or anything that is in the Constitution or in the labor laws. They have no medical aids, no provident fund, no transport, housing, benefits, benefits of any kind. And it's easy to get rid of them. And they're becoming women and young. And that's a connection between workers, young, not feeling any affection to the unions because they are in the front row, in the fire of this brutalization that is being offered to them by the system of capitalism. And so there has been a rise of what we call precarity, insecure, outsourced, labor brokered jobs in South Africa. And this informalization in the face of massive deindustrialization, because what have happened is that all of the previously secured, better paying, better benefits jobs are on the decline, not just in South Africa, It's a phenomenon everywhere else across in the world. Yes. We have not been able to, as a trade union, to ensure that we develop new strategies to give these workers more vulnerable than any other one a voice. So, unfortunately, they constitute the majority now. Mm. Unions represent 4 million to 5 million out of 16 million. You can see that about more than 10 million of workers do not belong to any trade unions. The face of them is black young women.
Mm.
And then you have another category of workers who are kept in structural unemployment. 60% of them have never worked. And 8.4 million of them are not in any employment, not any education or training. 8.7 million.
Do we then still categorize them as workers if they've never been employed?
Yeah, workers. In terms of the ideology we believe in, anyone who stands in a queue to sell their labor for a living is a worker, belongs to the working class, and eventually will be politicized and he will become a member of a class of the working class.
Okay.
Yeah, in a class divided society such as ours. So these are workers in our view, and they have no chance of being owners of production, no chance in a blue moon. They're finding it difficult to even get employment opportunity. How much more to be owner of any mine or big tracts of land? So they are working class, and that class is 12 million in our country, total. The face of it being the young people, black people, the women, and the people in the rural areas. But also increasingly, there is no more a real difference between urban and rural poverty, because there have been such a massive track of migration between the rural side of South Africa into the urban side. So the face of that poverty now, unemployment, is the informal settlements around all of our big cities. And that's where, unfortunately, the resistance is being mounted. Mm. The service delivery protests are coming from there.
Yeah.
But the face of degradation and total marginalization is those informal settlements. And the trade union movement has not been able to find a connection with that working class. It is standing on its own. SAFTU made a pledge that it will connect with those members of the working class. It will connect with the informalized working class. And it will create one movement out of those that are in secured big firms, big numbers, and those that are in, we are 2, 3, 10 year, and we have no union, we have no rights. We hear you celebrating May Day and talking about the beautiful history of struggles of workers. But I'm sorry, we make no connection.
We cannot
with
relate,
all of that.
Yes.
We're not relating to that. Yeah.
And has SAFTU made any strides with that pledge that you have committed to?
It's tough. It's tough. It's tough. We have in 2018, July, convened a working class summit, deliberately looking at the unemployed, the informalized, and the unions from the big workplaces. And 167 formations came. So we all agreed, let's do a common battle. Let's take forward a common battle which will connect these battles of the workplace, be they from big or small, with the struggles of the workers in the townships, in the informal settlements, and with the rural areas. We've made some strides, but not significant to the point that you can say there is now a norm that workers are conscientized that their struggles can only be won fully if they have this support
if they're unionized,
of the informal sector. And if these informal sector jobs are unionized and that they themselves can battle with the informal settlements shoulder to shoulder, we're battling there. And unfortunately, all of these things, in my view, I blame it to the current environment of the politics. A large number of these working class formations believe that they have been betrayed by the ANC, and that there is a need for an alternative. And that's where then the divisions will emerge. Others will say, here is our alternative. Others will say, no, we still have to have a proper discussion so that we do not repeat the same mistakes about the alternative and so forth and so forth. So those issues tend to unsettle some people who would have come to that working class summit genuinely wanting this unity between all of these three segments of the working class, and who will then be turned off by a discussion about an alternative to the ANC. That's not what they came here for. Others will say, no, the leadership is delaying us. We needed an alternative. Look at what is happening. Opportunists have now occupied the space. You are delaying us. We need an alternative. When is the date of a Labour Party being launched, a Workers' Party being launched? All of those things then tend to be small distractions to the agenda of uniting these three segments of a restructured working class. So you were asking, the question is, that's the source of demoralization. And that's why workers, even from the big firms, feel that they are being betrayed by the union and their leadership. Because the space have completely changed. And and you must appreciate how different the space is from the pre-1994. Let's just look at these examples. I'm sorry, I don't want to ever personalize politics, but let's look at these few examples. Before 1994, President Cyril Ramaphosa was one of the most liked trade union leaders in South Africa, adored by everyone. He's now the president
of the country,
and is driving what workers perceive to be anti-poor programs. The Minister of Minerals and Energy was one of those who succeeded him. And the Minister of Finance was the General Secretary of NUMSA. The Minister of Education, of Labor and Employment became the General Secretary of the Teachers Union. And I can go on and on to list these giants of the labor movement who are now leading political figures. But that's not the end of the story. Loads of other very senior leaders of the movement became successful businessmen, multimillionaires, some suspected to be multi-billionaires. The shop stewards, militant shop stewards, became HR managers. And so when there is a divided table, one side is your well-experienced shop steward using all of the experience gained from the other side of the table to simply dribble the new shop steward who doesn't have the same level of education and experience. So everybody says there's confusion. What are we fighting for? Are we fighting to lift these guys up? And then there's a moment of what you will call the transformation of 1994. The question that we're asking is, transformation, who benefited in the main from this transformation? Because even when we were in COSATU, the first statement we made after 10 years of democracy was that in economic terms, the people who have benefited more from transformation, from democracy and freedom, that was fought for by black working class, is capital.
Mm.
So we now concluding the third decade. I can challenge anybody who will say the main beneficiaries of economic transformation has not been capital, and at the expense of the working class. And I've told you how the working class have been restructured in South Africa. So that's what demoralizes workers.
Mm.
The transformation have meant that even though there's greater access to healthcare and our mothers who are pregnant can go and get free healthcare, kids under age of 6 can get free healthcare, and that public hospitals remain the cheapest, far cheaper, you can't even compare.
Mm.
And but there is some developments that says, but these hospitals have become the mortuaries, and these hospitals don't have a panado. And you get 10 back, and when you're supposed to get a treatment for your HIV and you develop resistance, because after traveling long kilometers in the rural areas and get told that we've run out of antiretrovirals, you have to battle to come back. Before, when you come back, you now have all manner of other resistance, and you die when you should have not died.
Mm.
So, same like education, massive gains, big access, free education, schools, numbers growing, food provided, but still the fault lines remain. Very few schools have libraries, no security. And I was listening to another teacher saying, we are being raided now and not gained by the criminals who come and take the cell phones and
computers
and everything from the schools. And so when you look at the structure of education, you still see that transformation that is championed by one of the founding members of SATU, Comrade Angie Motshekga, has meant that if you analyze the 2023 matric results, that when you look at the full 12-year span, 450,000 didn't arrive at matric.
Yeah.
They left the schooling system, and they became securities, and they are tellers at the retail stores, and they are unlikely to go back. They are joining that. They become that 8.6 million of young people.
That strata of workers you spoke about earlier.
No education, no employment, no training. And they've become part of that long 12 million people who are unemployed. So, but transformation have happened.
Mm.
When the majority of our kids cannot read with their meaning when they are on grade 4 and grade 5, when we can't compare with our peers on mathematics and science. So transformation seemed to be about celebrating matric results, big time. But the system of education is not making us to compete with Zimbabwe, Swaziland, and Botswana.
Mm.
And the transformers are leading it. The former liberation movement heroes are the ones who are leading it.
Mm.
This is what is creating a demoralization amongst workers and society as a whole.
Yeah. I think that's quite a fair analysis. Let's chat about the COSATU split. What impact do you think that had on the trade union landscape in the country?
Firstly, the split is created by what we are talking about.
Exactly.
Because others, mainly the public sector unions of COSATU, are very happy. They have a sympathetic government and who knows how important SATU and Nihau and Pope Crew and all of them are in their electoral fortunes. Mm. They want to keep them happy, even though neoliberalism at this stage is setting them against each other. The austerity programs that were launched by Jacob Zuma after the 2008 and 2009. World economic crisis. But the source of that was the naturally manufacturing unions more militant sitting on the face of this restructuring that we were speaking about of the protected, the underprotected and the marginalized altogether. Begins to say, but hey guys, we're making no progress here. This National Democratic Revolution is off the rails. And so we can keep this alliance. NUMSA leads this battle, and so the split happens. And unfortunately, where we are, irrespective of what could have been the reasons of that split, the trade union movement as a whole have become weak.
Mm.
Because of that split, despite of that split. And no one is able to say, for example, those that drove the dismissal of NUMSA and others, a host of people were dismissed before NUMSA itself was dismissed. Nobody is able to say in COSATU, you see, we were right. There were voices like that of Fikile Majola, the General Secretary of Nihau, who said, let's surgically remove them. And thereafter, we will build a COSATU of our dream. Meaning that the COSATU under, with NUMSA and myself and others present, was not the ideal one, because in my view, was not licking the boots enough of the ANC. But now you ask them, was that a good decision? All of them in their sleep, their conscience will tell them that no, that was a disaster decision we took.
Mm.
But let's face it, SAFTU have not proven to be a new broom. Good statements on paper, battling to materialize all of these dreams. Divided itself. By the very same issues that divided COSATU, by the way, neglect, investment company, the presence of the devil called the money, weakening democracy, death of worker control, death of education, no training of shop stewards and officials. All of those things are present in all of the trade unions, whether they are in FETUSA, NACTU, SAFTU. And that's why we are pushing for the creation, at least, of a confederation between the four federations that are participating in NEDLEC. And luckily, in the labor school that took place early February, all of us agreed that there's a need for a confederation to coordinate the common programs, common interest. And one of those common interests is to fight against austerity programs that is driven by this government. So that's a glimpse of a hope in that if we were to really succeed to march together, and in Cape Town, there was some elements of marching together against the budget speech of the minister. We need that. Only when workers see us emphasizing on their interest about retrenchments, job losses, living wage, social wage, will they begin to take us all seriously? But as long as we are about, let's vote for the ANC, let's vote for that party, But the real basic interest of workers comes second. Then workers will continue to have no confidence in the trade unions. Currently, it's only 23-26% of workers who belong to trade unions. That figure will go 20%. In America, it went as low as 14%, 7% in the private sector. That's how bad things are. And I know that unions in America think that Joe Biden is the best thing that could have happened to them because he's unmistakably pro-union, pro-trade union rights and worker rights and all of that. He believes in fairness, despite that we hate him for supporting the genocide of the people of Palestine. But it's good for the American workers. I've not checked whether these new rounds of mobilizing and recruitment campaigns have begun to at least lift the levels of workers believing in the trade unions again. The point that I was making is that if we are not careful, we will hit 23-20% and then follow the syndrome.
And the numbers will continue to dwindle.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Of America, yeah. And that would be very sad because unfortunately, whilst that is happening, the levels of exploitation of workers is worse.
On the rise, yeah.
It's on the rise.
You, in your analysis, you present a myriad of challenges that have contributed to the demoralization of workers. I mean, particularly in COSATU that were prevalent in COSATU prior to the split, that now find themselves materializing in federations outside of COSATU. Will we ever see that unity amongst the working class prior to 1994? Will we ever see it in this post-democratic South Africa again, with all the challenges that are facing the sector?
Difficult. My hope is that by the time the next Congress of SAFTU takes place, there's some semblance of a coordinated campaign of workers uniting all of the confederation, fighting job losses, fighting against the collapsing of the state-owned enterprises, fighting privatization, and fighting against retrenchment, and fighting for a living wage together. That's what we need at the beginning. If we were to do those things properly and thoroughly, there will be no need to maintain SAFTU, COSATU, FEDUSA, NACTU separate to one another. And more independent trade unions will find no reason to be outside a federation that is truly fighting for them, for the interest of the workers. This is very easy said than done.
Yeah.
Because in the pot, there's ego, there's leadership positions, there's loyalty to the logo,
interest in the
to
ruling
the history.
Party.
There's an alliance, a big elephant in the room.
In the room, yes.
And you can see that COSATU still believes, despite all of the evidence, that the ANC have totally dismally failed workers, at least where it matters the most, which is the midsection of the body, the stomach. Wages have been suppressed in South Africa since 1990. The gap between the rich and the poor have been widening.
Widening, yeah.
The levels of unemployment have been increasing. Levels of poverty and the levels of corruption in the private and public sector has made us to compete with the worst rogue states in the world. Yes, there have been gains, and a lot of people say, oh, yes, they don't forget that we have more access to water, electricity, and education, healthcare. Important those things are. But those things are not more important to a worker than a job. The primary reason why a union must exist is for jobs. And when you get failed where it matters the most, in the front of jobs, there's no reason for you to maintain a political relationship at all. But then, you know, comrades have different views. And, we respect their views. Some of us held those views very strongly at some point. So we have to be tolerant.
Yeah.
But our hope is that can we fight austerity together? Mm-hmm. The austerity of cutting budgets left, right, and center across all service delivery areas is biting workers, employed and unemployed. And why can't we fight that at least and see whether we cannot, in the process, find a reason to create a confederation and hopefully somewhere down the line realize the dream of one union, one industry, or at least coordinated, effective organizing of workers in a changing world, but one country, one federation.
Yeah.
Before all of us die.
And I mean, over a number of years, ANC conference to ANC conference, members of the alliance usually raise what is called the reconfiguration of the alliance, where they believe that will solve the imminent challenges that they are facing. Do you think this reconfiguration can be materialized, or is it just another fairy tale?
It's a fairy tale. We left singing that song.
Yeah.
It never happened. Yeah. Up to now, there's no reconfigured alliance.
Mm.
We have been innovative, calling for different kinds of an alliance. We need a political alliance, a political center. The SACP have now conceptualized this reconfiguration. All of it, you know, what is it on the bottom line?
Mm.
Can we drive the transformation together as equal partners, even though the ANC is a leader of the alliance? But can we have a sense that we all have some tips?
Contribution to the steering wheel, yes.
In terms of where it is turning to. Mm. The steering wheel, one person only, or 2, 3, 10 of them who were very powerful in the ANC, drove it to the right and introduced privatization as the theme, as the main program of the ANC in 1995 to fully-blown neoliberalism based on reducing the role of the state in the economy, and which led to 1 million jobs lost between 1996 and 1999, forcing COSATU under our leadership then for the first time to embark on an openly political strike. We went on a strike on the 10th of May in 1999 to protest. So have this reconfiguration ever happened? It's not there even now. Mm-hmm. They are now again crying. We hear they are afraid to cry louder because there is now MK, there's EFF, who say, we told you.
Yeah.
They are crying, hey, not enough of us are in this list going to parliament. And unfortunately, it seems that too many of them have transformed the Federation of Workers into an instrument and a vehicle to climb into that gravy train in parliament.
Yeah.
And that's why there's so much neglect, because instead of people taking up militant struggles against austerity, they don't want to rock the boat because they still want to be looked at sympathetically in the list process.
Mm.
And that's the fundamental, that's what I call that the massive elephant in the room that makes it very difficult to coordinate real solidarity amongst workers.
Yeah.
But look, there are signs that workers are now beginning to be tired of being promised a reconfigured alliance when they are in the backseat of this coach driven by the liberal former trade unions.
Yeah.
I was in a COSATU Congress, historically, never been there until last year. There was a war there. There were workers openly rioting and revolting against the chairperson of the ANC, their former idol, Dalai Lama, Gwedemandashe. And Nihau led that very interestingly.
Yeah.
And other unions very, very keen to say, let's review this alliance. But it took the most beneficiary of the transformation to resist that, the teachers' union. And when you analyze this transformation and look at who have really benefited in this dysfunctional education system, it's the SATU activists, the very minister of basic education. At some point, almost every director general. And at some point, every MEC, at some point, every head of a district, every principal, every deputy principal, HOD, were SATU leaders. So they have a stake.
And
this is what I'm saying, the contradiction between a transformation that produced worse results for the working class. I spoke to you about the state of the public education, but these results are produced by the cadre, the leader, the transformer in inverted commas. And all of those things play a role in the disunity of the trade unions in our country. We live in a hope that at some point a new generation of workers will arise to say this alliance has not worked. This call for a reconfigurator has been made since 1995 when the ANC started to develop and drive anti-worker programs. Nothing have come out of it. The alliance works only during elections time. After the elections, everybody knows his place. The ANC governs, and here is a tragedy. It governs with the communists and trade unions implementing anti-worker programs. That's what the tragedy is.
It's quite evident, I mean, in what we see unfolding with, I remember at this year's ANC January 8, the Uzingi Swalosi was presenting a message of support ahead of the president's address. And she made one rallying call to say, it's funny how during times like these, we present a united front. But when it's time to ventilate worker issues, the very same ANC-led government is the one that takes us to court, as if there's no platform that we have and a relationship that we have as an alliance where we can ventilate these issues. So I think it's quite interesting to have seen the developments in the union space. Taking it back to your time as COSATU SG, do you believe there's anything that you could have done differently to avoid this reality that we are currently in?
No, I have no. The only mistake, and it was a big mistake, was that I was convinced by some leaders of both COSATU and the SACP that the then deputy president of the ANC, Jacob Zuma, was going to be good for the agenda of the working class. And therefore, we must rally workers behind him. I was reluctant for that, by the way. I'm going to write that in my book one day. And I remember exactly where we were here in Parktown when these comrades came and said, after several meetings, that this is the way to go, Jacob Zuma. And I said, fine, let's do it. The difference between me and everybody is that once the collective decides that this is the way, I throw my weight, my soul, my everything behind that. So I throw my weight, my soul behind decisions of the unions to rally behind Jacob Zuma. And in the process, unfortunately, we acted not only in an unprincipled manner by declaring a non-socialist as the biggest socialist, and also closing our eyes to serious allegations such as that our hero had taken a 500,000 bribe from a company that was selling arms to South Africa. We used to joke about these things and say, ah, what is 500,000? We are losing jobs here in their billions. Our economy is not based on redistribution of wealth. We ignore that's a small matter. Our aim is to drive the ANC programs towards left and towards the Freedom Charter. That's a fundamental mistake. I live to regret that every day, because every day I'm reminded of that tragic mistake we committed in 1995, or in 2005, not in 1999, in 2005. Massive mistake.
What exactly makes you reflect on that past decision and define it as a tragedy?
Because none of what we said was going to happen happened. There was no ANC that turned to the left. The ANC consolidated the move towards the right under the leadership of President Jacob Zuma. The response to the world economic crisis, fine, it was the biggest crisis in decades, the 2008 crisis. But there was no lack of other examples of how you manage that crisis all over the world, including in Europe. He led, together with Malusi Gigaba and Pravin Gordhan, people that we trusted, he led this austerity program and introduced in his term. Don't forget about these people who are fooling themselves that President Jacob Zuma represent any left-leaning radical program. That's nonsense. They know it in themselves that there is no left, there is no radicalism, and there is no pro-poor program that he will ever lead at the economic level. Symbolic things can happen, and some of them were absolutely important. I'm not taking away some of the greatest strides we made under the leadership of Jacob Zuma. For example, the issue of anti-retrovirals and ending the denialism was absolutely great. If that didn't happen, a good number of political leaders that you know would have died in that denialism of President Thabo Mbeki. Mm-hmm. They would have died. They would have perished.
Mm-hmm.
Whilst the president then was saying he have never seen anybody dying from HIV and AIDS.
Mm-hmm.
And so we give that to President Zuma. We give the fact that on his eve of his departure in the ANC, he introduced some level of free education for those who are earning below 340,000. So NAFSA suddenly embraced them and supported loads of people. As a result of that, the face of universities have changed. And so even if you are so critical about the ANC, you have to give that to them.
Mm-hmm.
If there was no NAFSAs, the working class could have never afforded to pay a 65,000 rand a year to Wits University, UJ, or whatever university. We just don't have that money. Not even the middle class affords that.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, there was that. But on the fundamental, what is the fundamental? And then I'm speaking to these MK people. The fundamental transformation we were yearning and still yearning for is a program to redistribute two things: wealth from the rich to the poor.
Mm-hmm.
Jacob Zuma failed together with the ANC dismally. Instead, there is a redistribution of wealth in this country from the poor to the rich, and that's why we have become the most unequal society in the whole world. And secondly, there ought to have been a redistribution of land. And that even in with the Freedom Charter saying amongst those work it, it's fine. But our government simply failed. Even under Jacob Zuma, he cannot go out and say, in my 10 years or nearly 10 years as a president, this is the difference I made on the question of addressing redistribution of wealth and redistribution of land. Where is he going to get the stamina at 82 years?
That's a critical question.
The people who are jumping in the streets, they know that. Look, somebody says, there's only one fellow who's not afraid of you. It's your conscience. The conscience doesn't tell you lies. You suppress it deliberately because nobody sees and hears it speaking to you at night. You suppress it. But everybody knows that this comrade, if there was to be a truth, you can't make a separation and say Zuma and ANC are different.
Mm.
Why are they different now? Why is this a Ramaphosa ANC now when there was no Zuma's ANC between 2007 and 2018? Nonsense. So that's the fundamental mistake we committed.
Mm.
And I have taken full responsibility. I even had to apologize to President Thabo Mbeki to say, hey, I believed this conspiracy theory that you were driving an anti-Zuma program. By the way, a lot of that support for President Zuma was based on what I normally call the basic instinct of a worker, is to throw himself and herself behind a person they perceive to be the victims. And that's what workers do. That's what we did. That's what COSATU did. We had felt that this is a victim and that there was an elaborate plan to stop him ascending to the position of the president. And we had we said, if he was the deputy GS, he was the deputy president, why stop him now to ascend? And where is this corruption allegations coming? We saw all of that as a part of the conspiracy. We even believed that the Thabo Mbeki's were agents of the regime from before 1994, this comrade and this comrade. And we were promised all the time, one day, Bafana Bam, I'm going to tell you. I'm going to, up to today, even those who are rallying behind President Zuma now are being promised the same thing.
The same thing.
One day, we will tell you who was the agent. The last time he was here in this building when he started mentioning few people and he had to withdraw because he was being sued, which means that he was telling a lie that these people were agents.
Were agents
so
at the time.
That's a fundamental mistake we committed. And from where I am, that mistake is exactly what led to the split of SAFTU, of COSATU, leading to the creation of SAFTU. Without that mistake, COSATU would have battled with its internal things of pro-ANC, increasingly questioning the alliance with the ANC. It would have contained that within. And the SACP would have never developed such a thin skin. Its general secretary would have not amended its constitution so that he can serve as a cabinet minister whilst being the general secretary at the same time. And great minds would have remained in the SACP, and it would have been an SACP of what we saw in Krisani, critical, mobilizing on the ground, but still supporting the ANC if the ANC would have remained a pro-working class formation. The ANC would have not gone through all of the difficulties. There would have been no COPE. There would have been no EFF, because the EFF was created directly from the intolerance mounted by President Jacob Zuma himself. And I know people say, hey, hey, there should be an alliance between the EFF and ANC now. I was there. I know. And despite all of the denials, that actually the dismissal of Jacob Zuma was driven by President Zuma. He knows how to play his games. He doesn't do things directly himself. He gets an army of psychopaths who launch these attacks inside the structures of the party. Ronald Lamula will tell you a very, very sad story of how, when they have now gotten rid of Julius Malema, but they were still not trusting the Youth League. They wanted now to dismantle it, everything that have remained deeply loyal to the ANC. They went for the Lamulas and others. They came to my house after that, in almost in tears, to say we had relied on President Zuma that he will not allow this to happen. And when that item on the agenda came, President Zuma was on the phone walking in the grass outside, deliberately making sure that his people remove him so that he can say, and indeed, when he saw them walking out with their bags from the meeting, he said, oh, but it was his agenda. Same now. So I never supported the removal of President Begin. Not true. Not true. He engineered that thing. But he never himself went inside the structures to champion it. That was the mistake. Today, the movement, I was looking at, some people were looking at, and I was looking at this thing. I was born in the ANC, and I was not recruited by anybody. Mm-hmm. I was not recruited anybody to be active in the student, youth, and trade union movement. It was out of the background that I searched for weapons to fight the system. And the point that I was making, people were rejoicing looking at the by-election in Newcastle. And where it shows that the ANC just got, I think, 57%, the MK 28%, the EFF somewhere about
Below the MK?
Way below. In the rural areas, that's going to be a reality, way below the MK. So people say, yeah, MK is growing from 0 to 28%. The EFF is now into 3% from zero in the rural areas, blah, blah, blah. But with me looking at the cost of 2005, I say I add that 51% of the ANC, that of 28% of MK, and that of the EFF to reflect the true strength of Oliver Tambo's movement.
Mm.
It's a tragedy.
I hear that, yeah.
Yeah. It's been killed, and the person who played a fundamental role in its destruction is the fellow that we said will drive a pro-worker, pro-poor agenda in 2005, and we ignored all of the signs. There were signs.
Red flags,
including the rape trial. We said it's not more important than the country. And unfortunately, the country now is suffering.
Yeah.
We are now, and then I believe this, we are now looking at the barrel of a possible massive instability in South Africa because of that mistake. I was listening to this young fellow, Kanyile, on the social media.
Mbongikosi is the MK youth leader, yes.
Kanyile, yeah. And he's not the only one. There's a Visvian ready there.
Yes, and the threats that they're making.
The threats, they're saying, if we don't get 2/3, you will pay with your lives and there will be blood. If President Zuma is not on the ballot, there will be riots and anarchy. But they know that the law says if you have been sentenced to 15 months without an option of a trial, you can't stand.
That's a criminal record.
It's
yes.
a criminal record. Mm. No, they say the country
plus he's already must served set, 2 terms.
Must set a new standard to say everyone who's convicted can be a member of parliament, and or else we will ban the drugs.
Should we take their threats seriously?
I take them very, very seriously. Mm. I was here in July 2021. Mm. All of us saw what happened. And I see what the commission says. No. Everybody have to admit that what sparked that was the arrest of President Jacob Zuma. It may be that the poor took an opportunity later to go and steal bread.
Mm.
And the middle class went to take washing machines.
Mm.
But what sparked that was the people who believe that our homeboy, our hero, our leader is above the law and that he should not be held accountable.
And I think in that breath, in terms of law and order in this country, is it fair that the country should be held at ransom by a pocket of society who believe so much in this one individual that they're willing to, as they say, lay their lives on the line for him? I think, do you think it's fair that the country should be held at ransom?
It's totally unfair. And our view is that the country must not give in to this blackmail.
Mm.
Come what may come, there should be no constitution amended to accommodate
one individual. Yeah.
There should be no laws amended to accommodate one individual. The day we do that, we would have arrived. In fact, we would have walked inside a house with big letters, Banana Republic. We are already standing in the doorsteps of a banana republic.
Mm.
Now, our criminal justice system is on its knees. Police can't identify even a significant, I can't remember the percentage now, can't even identify a significant numbers of people who are committing murder. And there are about 84 people dying every day in the streets of South Africa. Most of those people who die, their families will never see justice.
Mm.
We are in that state where the police can't present a case. In the NPA is so ravished, can't present any decent state case in front of any magistrate.
As I mean, dockets go missing like nothing happened in this country.
Look at how they go around to post as if they have been found not guilty.
Mm.
Including senior people who you thought that if the police was to make one example that can be replayed all over in the conscience of everybody, a lot of people will stop this thuggery of stealing.
Mm.
We've killed them. Look at the state of almost every state on enterprise. We are standing on the doorsteps of a failed state.
Mm.
The day we allow President Zuma to force us into amending the constitution so that he can serve the third term because of threats of violence.
Mm.
The day that we amend the laws so that those who have been charged with sentences of 15 months without an option of a fine can now serve as members of parliament, then we would have given in.
Yeah.
The whole efforts of Chief Luthuli, Seme, Dube, Tambo would have gone into a total waste.
Mm.
I believe that South Africa must draw a line on the sand to say we can't.
Yeah.
Sorry, we can't. And the law enforcement, which have been hollowed out, and that's another reality, they have been hollowed out. And I wonder if they can really mount their resistance if those thugs start to ban the trucks from Richards Bay to Durban.
Mm.
Whether we will be able to withstand that using our army. The army, when they were in Durban, they called us to say, do you know that there are only two rounds of ammunition in our big R5s.
That's alarming.
Because there's no ammunition left in our in the barracks.
Mm.
That's the state of affairs.
Mm.
And a lot of people will say, but who created those conditions? And a lot of people in society, even today, will say, your men, your darling, they're saying your tsunami.
Your icon.
Your icon.
We've got so much to get through still, but I'm trying to be cognizant of time. Just quickly, were you surprised that almost everyone who was in Zuma's inner circle sort of propelled him to power later got sidelined or pushed out of the ANC and the alliance? Was that a surprise to you?
I was not surprised. From the beginning, we expressed a concern. Here was the main concern. At least I expressed that. Publicly, I said, I'm worried about two phenomena. The juniorization of the ANC's NEC and the juniorization of the cabinet. Because these campaigns against the most, even if they were liberals, but those that have the institutional memory suddenly are out of the NEC, out of the cabinet, you have to be worried about what could be the agenda of that.
Mm.
Generalization means that there's only one father figure who cannot be questioned by anyone.
Yeah.
In the house, both in the NEC and in cabinet. And I saw this generalization happening. The removal of Paulo Jordan, of Zola Skweyiya, the sidelining of other stalwarts, even of the women stalwarts, by Thakowa and others.
Mm.
And I said, yeah.
These are the telltale signs.
This is a sign. It's a very, very worrying sign. Yeah. I was going to raise a second point. Then there was a zulification of the state institutions.
Mm.
And I know that this is a very sensitive issue because I'm coming from the Eastern Cape. People say that's a Xhosa complaining. It's Xhosa Nostria. No.
Mm.
Look at the record. Look at who was the cabinet ministers, what capacity they had. Look at who was the director general. Look at who got deployed into the state-owned enterprises.
Mm. Mm.
It was just happening in a manner that you cannot ignore.
Mm.
And again, this Bongi Ngosi Kanyile, fellow was in the press conference, he says it indirectly, but that's what it means.
Mm.
That's zulification.
Mm.
He says, there's no more blessers left. Things are bad.
Yeah. it's quite the character, yeah.
He's a character. Mm. I mean, out was a leader of the people who believe that they will get two-thirds, complain about the blesser phenomenon. Blessers are gone. It means that things are not working very well.
We've got bigger problems as a country.
It means that maybe, I'm not sure, that there's perhaps a systematic removal of those who got deployed post 2009, and to make the country look more, the state institutions to look more like the country, instead of more like one province.
Yes. Yeah. Are we surprised that former President Jacob Zuma started his own organization or political party, rather? Well, did that come as a surprise?
Anybody who engineered the destruction of the ANC from within, the destruction of the labor movement and the Communist Party, the youth led. I have an affection working with young people. And up to today, by the way, it takes me guts to criticize even Julius Malema, because I don't want to aid the people who were so happy to see his back.
Mm.
Up to now, I'm very reluctant. When he says things that I totally disagree with, I rather keep quiet, because I think that you created this level of intolerance. There would have been people inside the ANC speaking to him when he moves out of the line. Mm. So anybody who engineers the destruction of the Youth League has to be the enemy of the, not ANC.
Of young people.
Of the young people as a whole. And unfortunately, President Jacob Zuma's hands are full of blood when it comes to all of these organizations of the people. He engineered the destruction himself, no one else. Intolerant, me only speaks. And this is, by the way, let me just say this. When I hear him now going back to where he started, pregnant girls must be exiled
to Robben Island.
Kids must be whipped to schools, and going back to primitive, backward,
regressive views.
As if he have never crossed any lines with Joe Slovo or Moses Mabhida or Moses Kotane or Chris Hani or Nelson Mandela or even Chief Luthuli himself. I said, yeah, this is beyond the factory fault. And this is destruction. And that's why people will begin to say, hey, is this an agent all of lifetime? What are we dealing with here? And is this somebody who got promoted into a status he never deserved in this eagerness of O.R. Tambo to find a Zulu person when there was a criticism that ANC is a Xhosa organization? Was it Nelson Mandela's fault that he found any Zulu and so that he can deal with the criticism that this is a national movement? The ANC is not a Xhosa organization. Same like, by the way, I take that even further. Was Dada Mandela not desperate too much to promote Cyril as the next leader in order to show that the ANC is not a Nguni organization?
Yeah.
And how many mistakes have we committed this in the process of trying to find equilibrium from the tribal language?
Trying to squash the criticism at the time.
I suspect there was fundamental mistakes committed there, you know.
Yeah. We
the point that I was, however, making about going back to that, between 2005 and up to 2009-10, we, junior as we were, very young, general secretary of COSATU SACP, were able to send the most senior amongst us, Zweli Mkhize, to say hi. One of the instances was these talks about sending girls to Robben Island, or why suddenly you're getting married at 75 now that you have become a president? Have you not been a polygamist before you gained this power in 2007? Why all of a sudden every December we now invited to a wedding? I have been told where my place is together with all of you.
By the head of the household who can't be challenged.
Because we were too junior ourselves. There was no Paulo Jordan or Zola Skweyiya or Harry Gwala and that generation who could say, hey, we are usuya pakyasa gingu.
Mr. Vavi, we exist in a context where 30 years post-democracy, most opposition parties believe the only way to solve the country's crises and challenges is to remove the ruling party. What is your view on this phenomenon?
The ANC have really messed up big time. Even somebody who still up today holds some sympathy. And I'm telling you the truth. Deep down, there is a sympathy that says, if things were to be right again, I'll go back straight running. But it's impossible to defend it.
Do you think the ANC is capable of renewing itself?
No. Another generation, not this one. Somebody says to me, let's go back and fix this thing. And I say to him, let's count 10 up to 100 people who we know are totally incorruptible. We have not taken an opportunity to steal. Who are loyal to the ANC to the core. Who represent the true values of solidarity and sacrifice. Give me 100. We tried to count. We couldn't arrive at 10.
My goodness.
And I said, if the movement, you can't find 10 honest people, then that movement is lost. You can't save it anymore. I'm not going to say who we were doing these exercises with. I'd never ask. I didn't say to him, one day I will say this on the newspaper.
Yeah.
And he's a very prominent member of the ANC who used to be in cabinet. We couldn't find 10 people. We couldn't find 10. What will save the ANC is that 2/3 of the population who used to be voting population, who used to be ANC diehards, can't find an alternative in their eyes. And all of the political parties that have emerged do not seem to be filling the void left by the ANC in the eyes of the majority of this of the citizens.
Mm.
Look now, we have 27 million people that have participated in registering
to vote. Yes,
yeah, they are saying we will vote. We're waiting to see how many of that 27 will actually go to vote.
Arrive at the polls, yes.
By 2019, we had 36 million South Africans were of the voting age. Only 26 million had registered. And only about 16, 18 million actually voted. Meaning that 10 million who are supposed to be registered didn't register. 10 million of the registered don't go to vote. Yes. I wonder what is going to be this phenomenon now.
Mm.
That statement says ordinary people still do not see an option, do not see all of these other opposition parties as alternatives to the ANC. That's what will save the ANC.
Mm,
yeah.
Mm. And speaking of...
there may be, by the way, every poll says you're getting below 50%, but they're still going to be the biggest party, despite everything that have happened, because a lot of people can't see the alternative.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that will be their saving grace.
That's going to be,
you believe.
Yeah.
When President Cyril Ramaphosa was introduced, he was presented as the person who would come in and clean up after the nine sort of wasted years. He was presented as someone who was this wealthy businessman, incorruptible, who would lead or chart the path towards renewal of the party. What is your assessment of his performance as president?
Dismal.
Worse than former President Jacob Zuma?
No, never. Not worse.
Okay.
Not worse. There may be things that have gone worse, and I'm going to tell them. But let's just analyze what drove this, what we call Ramaphoria.
Mm-hmm.
There was a Ramaphoria. Those of us on the left were worried about this Ramaphoria. It was another unstoppable tsunami, a wave of excitement.
Yeah.
Behind this new broom.
Mm.
People were depressed by what they call now the 9 years wasted.
Mm.
And I don't believe in the 9 years. I believe in 30 years wasted.
Mm.
That's what I believe in. But there was a wave of excitement. What he said in Parliament, in quoting Huma Segela,
send me,
excited people.
Yeah.
And those of us who said that by the ANC have not turned away from being a liberal, we worry that, Jesus, people are being taken over
by storm.
The wave.
Yes.
It was a storm. If there was to be wasted years, look at that background.
Mm.
What came out of that? And let's face it. And let me be more historical.
Mm-hmm.
President Thabo Mbeki took unemployment from around 25% to 22% in the narrow definition of unemployment.
Mm-hmm.
In the expanded definition of unemployment, it was around 28%, expanded definition. President Zuma took that unemployment straight to 30%, the narrow definition. The expanded definition, it went to 40%. President Ramaphosa took that 30% of Zuma to 32%, and that expanded definition to 42% of unemployment. So from that, it's been a disaster.
Mm.
I mean, we were complaining and we wanted to get rid of President Mbeki for not dealing in the main, being able to deal with the crisis of unemployment in the main. But look at what have happened. Things have gone far worse. In fact, we have lost a full 10 percentage point in terms of unemployment. So, unemployment goes with poverty.
Mm.
You cannot have high unemployment rate, but you are winning the battle against poverty, like President Ramaphosa is trying to mislead and pull a wool in the eyes of the whole country. Mm. Not going to happen like that.
Yeah.
It's not happening like that. So when it comes to unemployment, the figure says that things are worse than Jacob Zuma's era. And unfortunately, things are much more worse for both of them than the Thabo Mbeki era.
Mm.
So when he was speaking yesterday about how is it possible that is a one phase that is so totally different, he was speaking to me, that's exactly what have happened to the economy.
Mm. Mm.
Totally different. It's not like, it's like these are two different ANCs.
Yeah, yeah.
So Ramaphosa have wasted an opportunity to help the ANC deal with racism. Let me tell you what happens. When the story, the narrative in the dinners of the white household is, Botha may have been right. Look at what these guys have done. These massive implosions in the streets of Johannesburg. Look at the state of the city of Johannesburg, which used to be the bright. Look at the fires. Look at the infrastructure. We are running out of water. There is no water. These people can't govern themselves. We are in a mess. And so kids start to leave. We're going to Australia. We're going to Canada. Blah, blah, blah. Ramaphosa should have stopped that. And the reason why he couldn't stand up for what everybody thought he will represent was because he got himself so compromised by how he won that Congress, that conference of the ANC. And I was saying to me, and to many comrades I debate with, if the president of an organization would not be able to go to the branch and say, let's revive the old values of this movement based on sacrifice and selflessness, ubuntu, and that we should fight against the phenomenon of the use of money. He can't do that because we now know that he got R1 billion to win. It means that movement can't fight and really launch a revival. It can't. Worse now with the Palapala scandal. He got in, he squeezed through defeating, was it Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma? He just managed. And therefore, his effort was to try and unify the ANC. That is 50-50 divided. But he compromised himself because he allowed rogues. Those who supported him, they were rogues. Those that fought against him, they were rogues. He can't deal with both of them because he's nursing this unity. So the unity of the ANC became his theme at the expense of addressing the fundamental crisis that South Africa thought he was going to be addressing in his presidency. That's what have killed the president. Then the ANC started to fall under him. And if you look at the 2019, we found a very damaged, demoralized society. But the last local government elections tells us a story. They lost Johannesburg. They lost Pretoria, Tshwane, Ekurhuleni, and they lost Nelson Mandela before that. Long lost Cape Town.
Yeah.
So the project of uniting the country is in disarray. When you become the face of failure, the racist says, yeah, black people can't rule. And let's leave. Let's find a way of living. Or we are tolerating. All we're doing is winning. We are winning in radio everywhere, opportunity to express our frustration. We have no water for the past 11, 12 days. What do you expect them to do? So the sentiments of racism against black people are entrenching. And the people who are capitulating this racism to higher heights are those who are not enforcing the bylaws, such that now you can't walk anywhere in town because there may be an explosion anyway. Yeah.
One of the critical areas where President Ramaphosa is criticized harshly, and I think rightfully so, is the state of the economy. In your view, what do you think needs to be done to fix the state of our ailing economy? And what's the role of state-owned entities in reviving this economy?
We were in COSATU. The RDP is our brainchild.
Mm-hmm.
I was not the general secretary, but I was a national organizer. When the discussion inside COSATU led to, let's have a program of reconstruction. We sold that, and the ANC bought it. What in the main that program was about goes back to my criticism of the presidency of Jacob Zuma. It was about the redistribution of wealth. What it was about that we will grow the economy through redistribution of wealth from the rich to the poor. That's what the RDP centers around. Of course, it got unceremoniously kicked out. Mm-hmm. The ministry was closed and gear was imposed. So if you were to ask me, where's the solution? I would say, go back to the Freedom Charter. One demand only. The wealth of the country shall be shared. Can you unite? There will be no SAFTU. There will be no anything else. There will be no EFF, COPE, all of the splinter groups.
Mm.
If you were to deliver one demand of the Freedom Charter, the wealth of the country must be shared. How do you do that? We offer the following solutions. One, end neo-colonial structure of the economy. It can't be that after 30 years, all of our minerals get extracted raw, sent out to create jobs elsewhere in the world when you leave behind the people of Carltonville, Welkom, Virginia, Orkney, Stilfontein. And now, in no time, big parts of the Northwest, you leave them behind. They used to be on top of the wealthiest parts of the African and the world, but they're now facing poverty. Gangs are ruling, rape of women. Crisis, absolute crisis. What have stopped the ANC to do one thing? To say, and I know that they are now suddenly saying that in this manifesto, 30 years, nobody is listening. But what stopped them from saying, okay, we don't have guts to nationalize the mines, but we are going to use the tax system to punish all those who are mining and taking our minerals out of this country? We're going to force them to beneficiate here. And we're going to reward those who beneficiate through our tax system. And so 30 years down the line, one big activity is declining. It's on decline. We're becoming more and more a service economy. But the mining industry still dominates all our export incomes. So that's our structural problem in the economy. When you can't beneficiate and when you can't support or you can't develop new secondary industries that are linked to the value chain, when you don't have a strategy of re-industrializing and or deepening in industrialization, you then have a phenomenon that we have seen whereas our manufacturing sector used to contribute up to 22% to the GDP, that have declined by whole 50%. Mm. We're now down to about 11-12%. So if you were to ask me what is the solution, re-industrialize. Force them to beneficiate. If you don't have guts to hand over the mines, use the fact that you can license to say, we will give you a license if we can give us a plan of how you're going to use the platinum,
yeah,
in South Africa, the chrome, in South Africa, and you're not going to be adding to the stockpiles that are forever increasing. You know that China now calls the price of the minerals from South Africa and from the DRC because they have now stockpiles because we are sending.
Constantly exporting.
Consistently sending. That's the in the main what we call the neo-colonial economy.
Mm.
The economy is still based on the best interest of Europe and now increasingly China and India. We can't stop that because why? The real capture happened before 1994.
Mm.
And the real capture was amongst others, not only abandoned the RDP, not only abandoned the Freedom Charter demands of wealth must be redistributed, but also the BEE. Wow, that was a very important instrument for capital in South Africa. They gave all of our guys 1%, 0.2%, 0.01% in the mining industry.
Mm.
Before you know it, the leadership was no longer having the fire in this, in the belly to fight for redistribution. They know that
because they're benefiting from the status quo.
They are benefiting small benefits, by the way. Oh, I was in Ibiza.
Mm.
There's a holiday destination in the African island, Greek islands, blah blah blah, and we are happy. Our kids can go to the top private schools.
Mm.
They don't know that these are just peanuts. These are bones falling from the master's table.
Mm.
That's what killed our dreams, is the BEE. Not that conceptually it was all wrong, but how it transformed individuals, revolutionaries, that you could rely on, suddenly become the apologists.
Each man for himself.
That's where the phenomenon of dog-eat-dog started to entrench.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think as we draw close to our very, very interesting conversation, I think reflecting on your views, I think you present quite a compelling understanding of the state of affairs of the country, where we started, how we got to where we are as we speak. And it begs the question, do you perhaps have any aspirations to join mainstream politics at any point in your life?
In my life, I made a commitment, and I'm suffering for that commitment, by the way. My family is going through hell, like every other family. But I made a commitment that in my grave, they must inscribe only letters that says, he did his best.
Mm.
He was fallible. He committed political and personal mistakes, but he never betrayed the working class.
Mm.
That's what I want to go to my grave with. And will that be achieved? I don't know. The worst political advisor is the stomach. When you're suffering at a personal level, you become vulnerable to manipulation by the moneyed class. And I've made a commitment that I'm serving the last 2 years in the trade union movement.
Mm.
Everybody is asking, so what will happen after?
What next?
After 2026 in the last Congress of SAFTU. And so the discussion is, should you not join an existing political party? Should we not join or recreate a Labour Party or a Workers' Party that can unite? That they unite all these segments of the restructured working class, informal sector, and informal, the pauper class in society.
And the marginalized, totally
marginalized, and those that are in big firms and big number unions. Is that possible with the current levels of fragmentization, disunity? That's a debate that is happening. So I don't know what I'll be doing after 2026.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Would you consider campaigning for any of the existing parties if you were requested to do so?
By who?
Any of the existing parties could be...
No.
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 You don't see yourself rallying behind any of them publicly?
I have no mandate to do so. Mm-hmm. I am a mandate-driven individual. SAFTU's NSC couldn't conduct a discussion and conclude that this is the party even though we are not in an alliance we want to support. The best that we're going to do is to say, don't vote for the following. We will say, don't vote for entrenchment of the system of capitalism, even though capitalism is the only system that existing in the world. At least there must be a contestation.
Yeah.
There must be a contestation about the role of the state. Don't vote for privatization. Don't vote for austerity programs. Don't vote for corruption. At least. We don't know who else, but don't vote for those things. And we will write that. That's what in the Secretariat of SAFTU we want to sell to the leadership of the Federation, that even though we're not throwing ourselves behind any political party, but can we at least say, don't vote for your class enemies. Don't vote for the worst butchers of the working class.
I think that's quite good advice to give to your workers, particularly if you won't be declaring who you're supporting and if you won't be associating with anyone in particular. I think you alluded to it earlier that this close association to a ruling party is what contributed to the fragmentation and the disunity and sort of workers not feeling represented anymore. So I think that's quite valid advice to put forth to your membership. Mr. Vavi, I'd like to thank you very much for coming in today and having this conversation with us. I'm sure it will make for quite the earpiece for our readers to listen to you reflect on the state of the country, the state of unions, what has led to the problems we are facing, and what your proposed solutions are. So we'd like to thank you very much for coming in today, and we wish you all the best ahead. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
And that's it for this week's edition of the Sunday Times Politics Weekly. For more, please head on over to iono.fm, Spotify, Google Play, or Apple Podcasts to have a listen to some of our previous episodes. You can also find us, or follow us rather, on our social media pages. We are on Twitter and Facebook at Sunday Times. For the Sunday Times Politics Weekly, I have been your host for this particular episode. My name is Sisanda Aluta Mbolegwa. See you next time.